Section 5. Longevity, Mindset, and Fulfillment. The power of longevity, mindset, and the decision that will help you take control of your mind, your body, and your emotions, enhancing your entire quality of life. Discover the power of longevity and exponential technologies from my co-author, Peter H. Diamandis. The amazing power of placebos and how our mind can heal our bodies, as well as the latest breakthroughs in combating depression, anxiety, and PTSD. The power of decision. Learn the most important tool in creating and sustaining an extraordinary life, a life of joy, happiness, gratitude, and true aliveness.
Chapter 23, Longevity and the Power of Exponential Technologies, by me, Peter H. Diamandis, MD. How accelerating technologies and an abundance of capital are powering the quest for healthy longevity. I don't want to achieve immortality by being inducted into the Hall of Fame. I want to achieve immortality by not dying. William De Morgan. It's hard to remember how extraordinary our world is today compared to centuries past, and how far we've come, especially after surviving two waves of the COVID-19 pandemic and living with the constant bombardment of negative news emanating from our TVs, radios, and newspapers. Perhaps to make you feel a bit better about what we've all endured in 2020, history provides some valuable comparisons to remind us how far we've come in handling pandemics. Consider the following. Between 1347 and 1351, the bubonic plague, the most fatal pandemic recorded in human history, caused the death of 75 to 200 million people in Eurasia and North Africa, and wiped out some 30 to 50% of England. They never found a cure. The 1918 influenza pandemic, also known as the Spanish flu, was the most severe pandemic in recent history. It was caused by an H1N1 virus with genes of avian origin. It's estimated that about 500 million people, one-third of the world's population, became infected with this virus. The number of deaths was estimated to be at least 50 million worldwide, with about 675,000 occurring in the United States. This virus is still with us today and is the reason for our annual flu shots. If these were our current headlines, our governments would be paralyzed, our financial markets in ruins, and the problems we have today would look comparatively like a sunny day in California. We forget how much the world has progressed in the last century, and how today's scientific and technological muscle allowed humanity to emerge from the first COVID-19 pandemic waves relatively quickly, with a fraction of the deaths and the economic impact. Technologies like mRNA vaccines, global high-speed data connectivity, supercomputers, and global supply chains allowed science to design, test, and begin distribution of vaccines in under 12 months. At the same time, the convergence of exponential technologies made possible companies like Amazon, Zoom, Google, and Slack, which allowed global businesses to progress relatively unabated. Just like these exponential technologies have changed how we detect, prevent, and treat viral pandemics, these same technologies are now giving us the tools to fight the pandemic of aging. The best way to predict the future is to create it yourself. Throughout most of this book, we focused on the topics of vitality, strength, energy, and curing disease. But what about those of us who are actively seeking healthy longevity? The ability to shoot past the accepted limits of old age into our hundreds, while preserving our cognition, mobility, and aesthetics. Is it desirable? Is it possible? That's what this chapter is about. For example, we'll explain why we're biased to believe that we can only plan for 80 years of healthy life, and why we can probably expect more. How exponential technologies such as artificial intelligence, sensors, and biotech are transforming today's health tech revolution. How a massive amount of investment capital flowing into the field of longevity is accelerating health and longevity-related breakthroughs. Why longer lives won't lead to overpopulation of Earth, and frankly, why longevity is critical to the future of humanity. And finally, we'll be closing this chapter with the insights of two of the most brilliant longevity scientists, on what type of health span you should be shooting for. Before diving into the details above, I'd like to give you some context on my personal journey that has led me to this point of making longevity-related research, investment, and entrepreneurship my focus for the past decade and the decade ahead. I'd like to share with you why I'm so excited and why you should be too. I'm the son of two Greek immigrants, Harry and Tula, who since my birth wanted me to become a physician. My dad was an obstetrician-gynecologist. But while medicine was interesting, I was a child of the Apollo program, born in the 1960s, passionate about space. The Apollo program showed us what humanity could achieve, and that scientific documentary, Star Trek, showed me where our species was going. While I was passionate about space, it was everything to me. I had promised my parents I'd go to medical school, which I did, at Harvard. Luckily for me, while Harvard was hard to get into, it was even harder to fail out of. Thank goodness, because during my fourth year of medical school, I was running two space-related companies, a university and a launch company, and barely attending classes. By the late 1980s, I was extremely disappointed by the weak vision of NASA. Adding to the space program's glacial speed, the 1986 Challenger space shuttle accident ground everything to a stop. I remember thinking that in order for me to actually experience the space future I desired, I would need to do two things: live longer and help to accelerate the development of human spaceflight. One of my space-related efforts was co-founding the International Space University, ISU, started in a modest 500-square-foot headquarters above a bagel shop in Boston's Kendall Square. It was here, with my co-founders, the late Todd Hawley and Bob Richards, that I dreamed great space dreams. It was also here that I first encountered Murphy's Law, that pessimistic and defeatist proclamation, "If anything can go wrong, it will." Todd had jokingly put the poster up on the wall because he knew how much it bothered me. To counter the mental offense, I wrote on my whiteboard, "If anything can go wrong, fix it, to hell with Murphy," and wrote above it in all capitals, "Peter's Law." That began my accumulation of 28 Peter's Laws, some created, some borrowed, that have governed my life and which interestingly impact my views and efforts on the field of longevity. Laws like, the day before something is truly a breakthrough, it's a crazy idea. If you can't win, change the rules. If you think it's impossible, then it is for you. The best way to predict the future is to create it yourself. While ISU has grown from a 500-square-foot office to a $100 million campus in Strasbourg, France, it was the XPRIZE that really accelerated my dreams of opening the space frontier. Still jaded about my future prospects of spaceflight, in 1993, I read Charles Lindbergh's autobiography, The Spirit of St. Louis, and learned that his famous 1927 flight from New York to Paris was inspired by a $25,000 incentive prize offered by hotelier Raymond Ortega for the first nonstop flight between his birthplace of France and his new home in New York. It hit me then that maybe, just maybe, a large cash prize on the order of $10 million might inspire engineers and entrepreneurs to build the spaceship to carry the rest of us into space. Not knowing who my benefactor would be, i.e., my Ortega, Pulitzer, or Nobel, I called it the XPRIZE, with the X as a stand-in for the eventual sponsor. With no prize money or any competing teams, I announced the $10 million competition on May 18, 1996, under the arch in St. Louis. 5 years later, a visionary entrepreneur, Anousheh Ansari, and her family stepped up to fund the prize purse. Eventually, 26 teams from 7 nations registered to compete. And on October 4, 2004, a team called Mojave Aerospace Ventures, funded by Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen and led by legendary aerospace designer Burt Rutan, flew their vehicle, Spaceship One, on 2 consecutive flights to 100 kilometers altitude to claim the $10 million Ansari XPRIZE. And, as hoped, the fuse was lit and the commercial spaceflight industry began. 17 years later in 2021, we now see the fruits of the XPRIZE, as Sir Richard Branson, who licensed the rights of Spaceship One for Virgin Galactic, and Jeff Bezos with Blue Origin have commercially duplicated those XPRIZE flights to open a tourism marketplace. Since 2004, the XPRIZE Foundation has gone on to design and launch more than 250 million in prizes, with another 200 million under development across topics ranging from energy, water, and food to healthcare, oceans, and the environment. To fund these prizes, we've been able to attract an extraordinary group of visionaries, doers, and benefactors, a group we call our Innovation Board. We intentionally choose challenges that can't be fixed overnight, problems that were stuck, where not enough attention was being paid. Our goal at XPRIZE is simple: to give innovators a target to shoot for, to tackle and conquer, ultimately to kick the most brilliant minds into high gear. Every year I take the Innovation Board on an adventure trip to explore different topics and brainstorm new prize concepts. In years past, our topics have focused on artificial intelligence, 3D printing, VR, and AR. And in 2018, we focused on the twin topics of longevity and regenerative medicine, venturing to Vatican City, piggybacking on a pre-existing event called United to Cure, organized by Robin Smith, MD, and hosted by the Pope. It's this visit that Tony recounts in the opening chapter of this book. The Morality of Immortality. The Vatican Conference lasted 3 days and gathered the leading scientists and thinkers from around the world, covering many of the topics you've read about in the previous chapters. But without doubt, my favorite session of the event, and one in which I participated, was titled The Morality of Immortality. The discussion was moderated by CNN medical anchor Dr. Sanjay Gupta and included me, Rabbi Dr. Edward Reichman, Elder Dale Renland, Reverend Father Dr. Nicanor Astriaco, and NIH Director Dr. Francis Collins. At the start of our panel, Dr. Gupta asked Rabbi Reichman to provide a historical context from the Old Testament about human aging and longevity. Adam lived to 930 years old, started Rabbi Reichman. Methuselah lived to 969 years old. Abraham lived to 175 years. Moses died at 120. And it was after Moses that the human lifespan is set at its maximum to 120 years. Rabbi Reichman continued, recounting biblical studies. At the time of the flood of Noah, God pronounced that humans will be 120 years old. That did not occur immediately. It took roughly 750 years for the longevity of man to gradually taper down from roughly 900 years old to 120 years old. Rabbi Reichman cited the work of Nathan Aviezer, a contemporary scientist and physics professor in Israel, who writes on the Torah from an Orthodox Jewish perspective. Aviezer's interpretation is that during this period, a divine intervention introduced specific genes which curtailed longevity, and it took several generations for these genes to proliferate and shorten the human lifespan. It could perhaps be that we are attempting to identify those genes that God introduced at that stage of history and now reverse it to achieve that longevity again, explained Reichman. Whether we accept the biblical interpretation or not, the scientific record of human evolution tells a very different story regarding lifespan, one which does not include longevity. In the time of early hominids, 100 million years ago, our ancestors would enter puberty at the age of 12 or 13, and prior to birth control, quickly become pregnant. By the time they were 28, they were grandparents. Because food was always scarce, the best outcome for the perpetuation of the species would be for the grandparents to die early and not take food needed by the newborns. As such, the average age of early humans was only about 28 years old. Aging is not just a running down of the system, said Dr. Collins at the Vatican. It is a program process. Evolution probably had an investment in having the lifespan of a particular species not go on forever. You've got to get the old folks out of the way so the young ones have a chance at the resources. Fast forward to the Middle Ages, and the average human lifespan had grown to 35. At the turn of the year 1900, the average lifespan increased to the mid-40s. Today, it's approaching 80. So why do we age and die? And how long should we expect to live? While we've touched on this in earlier chapters, we'll turn our focus there now. Nearing longevity escape velocity. When I was in medical school in the late 1980s, I had little time to watch TV. On occasion, I would sneak an episode of Star Trek, but it was rare for me to sit on the couch and zone out. But I distinctly remember one Sunday afternoon when I became intrigued with a documentary on the topic of long-lived sea life. It turned out bowhead whales from the Arctic could live for more than 200 years, and the Greenland sharks can live to 400 or 500 years. I remember thinking, if they can live that long, why can't we? As an engineer, I figured it was either a hardware or software problem. As we have seen earlier in this book, we are just now entering an era where we can correct those hardware and software problems, given our newly created tools to read, write, and edit the software of life, grow organs, and modify the biologic hardware of our bodies. My dear friend Ray Kurzweil speaks about the concept of longevity escape velocity. It's an intriguing notion that in the near future, science will be able to extend your life by more than a year for every year you are alive. Once that happens, we can begin to think about true longevity. Ray's prediction is that we'll reach longevity escape velocity in the next 10 to 12 years. Professor George Church of Harvard Medical School echoes that same time frame. The exponential technologies that have improved the speed and cost of reading, writing, and editing DNA and gene therapies now apply to the category of age reversal, said Church on my most recent Longevity Platinum trip. Today, science is adding 1 year of life for every 4 years that we're alive. But I think age reversal advances could mean that we reach longevity escape velocity within a decade or two, within the range of the next one or two rounds of clinical trials. What does that mean? Can we extend the healthy human lifespan past that stated biblical limit of 120? Can humans live indefinitely? I implore you to think of what you would do with an additional 30 years of healthy life. As we'll see in this chapter, those exponential technologies that Dr. Church spoke about, technologies such as AI, CRISPR, gene therapy, DNA reading and writing, robotics, digital manufacturing, sensors and networks, are accelerating and being focused on health. While many scientists are conservative in their beliefs about extending the healthy human lifespan, I remain confident that we'll discover a number of longevity extending or age reversing technologies faster than most believe. If this is true, then all of us need to stay healthy and free of accidents in order to intercept the technology breakthroughs coming our way. To paraphrase Ray Kurzweil's book on this subject, Fantastic Voyage, it means we need to strive to live long enough to live forever. This is the reason for you to take advantage of the tools, platforms, and companies highlighted in this book, which can help you to maintain an optimal state of health and detect any disease at its earliest occurrence. Now let's jump into the accelerating technologies that are making the future faster than we've ever imagined. Exponential technologies driving longevity. In 2005, futurist and friend Ray Kurzweil wrote the cornerstone book on the topic of exponential or accelerating technologies called The Singularity is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology. As Bill Gates noted, Ray Kurzweil is the best person I know at predicting the future of artificial intelligence. His intriguing new book envisions a future in which information technologies have advanced so far and fast that they enable humanity to transcend its biological limitations, transforming our lives in ways we can't yet imagine. When I say exponential tech, what I mean is any technology that doubles in power while dropping in price on a regular basis. Moore's Law is the classic example. In 1965, Intel founder Gordon Moore noticed that the number of transistors on an integrated circuit had been doubling every 18 months. This meant that every year and a half, computers would get twice as powerful while their cost remained the same. Moore thought this was pretty amazing, and he predicted that this trend might continue. Well, it has for 55 years. Moore's Law is the reason the smartphone in your pocket is 1,000 times smaller, 1,000 times cheaper, and 1,000,000 times more powerful than a supercomputer from the 1970s. And it's not slowing down. Despite reports that we are approaching the death of Moore's Law, in 2020 it continued unabated and on schedule. By 2023, it's projected that the average $1,000 laptop will have the same computing power as a human brain, roughly 10 to the 16th cycles per second. 25 years after that, the same $1,000 laptop will have the equivalent computational power to all the human brains currently on Earth. More critically, it's not just integrated circuits that are progressing at this rate. In the 1990s, Ray Kurzweil discovered that once a technology becomes digital, or once it can be programmed in the ones and zeros of computer code, it hops on the back of Moore's law and begins accelerating exponentially. The technologies now accelerating at this rate include some of the most potent innovations we have yet dreamed up: quantum computers, artificial intelligence, CRISPR, gene sequencing and writing, robotics, nanotechnology, material sciences, networks, sensors, 3D printing, augmented reality, virtual reality, blockchain, and more. While these technologies are accelerating before our eyes, it's hard for us to grok what it means or fathom the speed of change. The reason has to do with how our brains perceive change. Humans evolved 300,000 years ago on the savannas of Africa in a world that was local and linear. Back then, you existed in your own bubble, all within a day's walk from your village. Nothing changed century to century or millennium to millennium, and it stayed that way throughout generations. And as a result, our brains evolved to only perceive, intuit, and interact with a linear world. We are all linear thinkers. Take 30 linear steps, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc., and you end up about 30 meters, just over 98 feet, down the road. But if I ask you to take 30 exponential steps, where an exponential is a simple doubling, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, and so on, you'll end up a billion meters away, about 621,000 miles. Put differently, you'll circumnavigate Earth 26 times. Predicting exponential growth is not intuitive. So why am I discussing all of these numbers in a chapter on longevity? Because the technologies involved in extending health span and longevity are exponential, and their impact on our lives is not intuitive. I want you to understand that a lot can happen in just a decade or two. It's probably worth memorizing the following. Double something 10 times, you get a 1,000-fold increase. Double something 20 times, you get a 1,000,000-fold increase. Double something 30 times, you get a 1,000,000,000-fold increase. Entrepreneurs who understand the power of such exponential growth have developed many of the most successful companies on the planet today: Google, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Tesla, SpaceX, Tencent, Microsoft, Alibaba, and Netflix, just to name a few. Let's consider a fun experiment. If you have a child, niece, or nephew, consider giving them the following choice. Option 1, offer them a dollar a day for the next 30 days. Option 2, offer them a penny on the first day, 2 cents on the second day, 4 cents on the third day, and so on. Chances are, they take the first option. $30 isn't bad for zero work. But if they took the second offer, what started out with a penny would result in $10 million on the final day. Now we're talking. And this is the same exponential power that is now driving changes in biotechnology around the world. Let's take a look at just a few examples. Exponential growth in genome sequencing. Consider the cost and speed of sequencing your genome. The Human Genome Project, backed by the NIH, took 13 years and $3 billion to sequence the first genome, all 3.2 billion letters of your life. Today, it's under $1,000 per genome and takes less than a day. Within 2 years, with Illumina's newest machines, it could cost as little as $100 and be completed in 1 hour. Incredibly, the cost of genome sequencing has been demonetizing at a rate 5 times faster than Moore's law. Exponential growth in storage. Consider data storage, which is critical for genomics worldwide today. The 3.2 billion base pairs of your genome corresponds to about 725 megabytes of data, or 0.75 gigabytes of storage. In 1981, if you were to store your uncompressed genome, a 1 gigabyte hard drive of storage cost $500,000. Today, it's 50 million times cheaper at under 1 cent per gigabyte. Exponential growth in computation. How about computation? In 1971, Intel put out its first computer chip, the Intel 4004. It had 2,300 transistors on it at a dollar each. Intel no longer actually tells you how many transistors are on their chips. but the recent Core i9 had 7 billion transistors at less than a millionth of a penny each. This represents a 27 billion-fold increase in price performance in 45 years. But it's not slowing down. In 2021, the Cerebras Wafer Scale Engine 2 set the world record as the largest integrated circuit chip, 8.5 inches to a side, housing a jaw-dropping 2.6 trillion transistors. Exponential growth in communications. If you have a smartphone, you have access to more computational power in your hand than most of the governments on the planet had just 30 years ago. You also have better access to ubiquitous, low-cost, high-quality communications than the top CEOs and the heads of state from 30 years ago. The challenge is we take such computational power and communications for granted, cursing our service provider when the occasional call gets dropped. Digital communications has been one of the poster children for exponential growth, showing iconic 100 times growth from generation to generation. For example, when 4G mobile service rolled out its 2009 offering, it offered 100 megabits per second speeds. A decade later, in 2019, 5G began deployment offering the speed of 10 gigabits, 100 times faster. When 5G first began rolling out in 2019, the number of subscribers were 13 million. By 2025, the 5G user base is expected to grow to 2.8 billion. But it doesn't stop there. In August 2020, a team from Osaka University and Nanyang Technological University in Singapore announced the design of a new mobile phone chip that could be the basis for 6G, promising speeds up to 100 times faster than 5G, fast enough to download 142 hours of Netflix in a second. These terrestrial networks promise to connect every human on the planet, all 8 billion of us, in the next 5 years. They represent a lifeline for health sciences. These high-bandwidth, low-cost connections offer everyone the ability to upload health data or to get support from medical AIs wherever you live. And it's not just people being connected. It's every device and sensor on the planet, what is referred to as the Internet of Things or IoT. Already, IoT-connected devices have multiplied at unprecedented rates, reaching 35 billion connected devices this year and projected to exceed 75 billion by 2025, 127 new devices getting connected to the Internet per second. In terms of health, every single person will have the ability for real-time monitoring of their health and physiology from sensors in their body and on their body, measuring everything from blood glucose and blood pressure to microRNAs that might indicate an impending heart attack or the quality of their sleep. Ultimately, all of this data will be uploaded to an AI that can monitor and advise you on your exact health status. Today, we have Amazon Alexa, Apple Siri, and Google Now. Eventually, we will all have a personal AI, a version of Jarvis from Iron Man. These personal AIs will collect and monitor your health data and enable us to ultimately become the CEOs of our own health. Artificial intelligence, neural nets, and protein folding. This computational work represents a stunning advance on the protein folding problem, a 50-year-old grand challenge in biology. It has occurred decades before many people in the field would have predicted. It will be exciting to see the many ways in which it will fundamentally change biological research. Professor Venki Ramakrishna, Nobel Laureate and President, Royal Society. Perhaps the most important exponential technology transforming our lives this decade is artificial intelligence. In the world of AI, machine learning emerged first, using algorithms to analyze data and make predictions about the world. This is how Amazon and Netflix make their suggestions on things you should buy and movies you should watch. Next came neural networks inspired by the biology of the human brain. These layered circuits are capable of unsupervised learning from unstructured data. Simply unleash a neural net on the internet and the system will do the rest. The success of neural nets over the past 5 years is nothing less than breathtaking. In March 2016, Google's AlphaGo defeated the world's Go champion Lee Sedol 4-1. Go has a game tree complexity of 10 to the 360th power. It's chess for superheroes. A few months after that victory, DeepMind upgraded AlphaGo to a neural net called AlphaGo Zero by updating their training style. Between 2015 and 2016, AlphaGo had been educated by consuming the data of thousands of games previously played by humans, which taught it the proper move and counter move for every possible position. AlphaGo Zero, on the other hand, learned to master the game of Go with zero data. Instead, it relies on reinforcement learning. It essentially learned by playing itself over and over and over again. Starting with little more than a few simple rules in mid-2017, AlphaGo Zero took only 3 days to beat its parent, AlphaGo, the same system that had beat Lee Sedol. 3 weeks later, it trounced the 60 best players in the world. In total, it took 40 days for AlphaGo Zero to become the undisputed best Go player on Earth. So how does this relate to health and longevity? Enter AlphaFold. Ever since the 1980s, when I was completing my engineering and medical degrees, I've been tracking a particular supercomputing problem that, if solved, would revolutionize medicine, called the Grand Challenge of Biology. The protein folding problem asked the following question: given an amino acid sequence, can you predict the ultimate three-dimensional protein structure that would result? Why does that matter? Proteins are perhaps the most important class of molecules in the human body, essential to life, supporting practically all its functions. They are macromolecules, made up of chains of amino acids. And what a protein does largely depends on its unique 3D structure. Once folded, proteins carry out a vast array of functions, ranging from catalyzing metabolic reactions, DNA replication, responding to stimuli, providing structure to cells and organisms, and transporting molecules from one location to another. Enzymes and antibodies are proteins, as are insulin, collagen, elastin, and keratin. If we could accurately predict protein structures from an amino acid sequence, it would open the door to an entire new avenue of low-cost and accurate drug development. Back in 1994, to monitor progress in the supercomputer protein folding problem, a biannual competition called the Critical Assessment of Protein Structure Prediction, CASP, was created. Until 2018, success was fairly slow and incremental, but following the success of AlphaGo Zero, the team at DeepMind turned their neural network loose on protein folding. They called their newest neural net AlphaFold. On its first foray into the CASP competition, AlphaFold got 25 of the possible 43 protein folding problems right. The second place team managed a meager 3. How accurate was AlphaFold's prediction? Incredibly accurate, within the width of an atom, or 0.1 of a nanometer. Arthur D. Levinson, chairman of Apple and CEO of Alphabet's longevity company Calico, had this to say about DeepMind's success: AlphaFold is a once-in-a-generation advance, predicting protein structures with incredible speed and precision. This leap forward demonstrates how computational methods are poised to transform research in biology and hold much promise for accelerating the drug discovery process. AI and drug discovery. Beyond predicting the structure of a protein, what if AI could generate novel drugs to target any disease overnight, ready for clinical trials? What if it was able to design a drug that was perfect specifically for you? Imagine leveraging machine learning to accomplish with 50 scientists what the pharmaceutical industry can barely do with an army of 5,000. This is the promise of using AI for drug discovery. It's a multi-billion dollar opportunity that can help billions of people around the world. To provide context on how incredible this opportunity really is, let's examine the global pharmaceutical market, one of the slowest, most monolithic industries to adapt, surpassing $1.25 trillion in revenues in 2019. In 2021, the top 10 pharmaceutical companies alone are projected to generate over $355 billion. At the same time, it currently costs more than $2.5 billion, sometimes up to $12 billion, and takes over 10 years to bring a new drug to market. And 9 out of 10 drugs entering phase 1 clinical trials will never reach patients. But a world of pharmaceutical abundance is already emerging. As artificial intelligence converges with massive data sets in everything from gene expression to blood tests, novel drug discovery is about to get 100-fold cheaper, 100-fold faster, and more intelligently targeted. One of the hottest startups I know in this area that Tony and I invested in is called In Silico Medicine, founded and led by CEO Dr. Alex Zverenkov. In 2014, Zverenkov started wondering if he could use these massive data sets and AI to significantly speed up the drug discovery process. He'd heard about a new technique in artificial intelligence known as generative adversarial networks, or GANs. By pitting two neural networks against one another, adversarial, the system can start with minimal instructions and produce novel outcomes, generative. Researchers had been using GANs to do things like design new objects or create one-of-a-kind fake human faces, but Zverenkov wanted to apply these to pharmacology. He figured GANs would allow researchers to verbally describe drug attributes. The compound should inhibit protein X at concentration Y, with minimal side effects in humans. And then the AI could construct the molecule from scratch. To turn his idea into reality, Zverenkov set up In Silico Medicine on the campus of Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland, and rolled up his sleeves. It took us 3 years of hard work to develop a system that researchers could actually interact with in this way, he explains. But we pulled it off, and this has allowed us to reinvent the drug discovery process. The results are an explosion in potential drug targets and a much more efficient testing process, says Zverenkov. AI allows us to do with 50 people what a typical drug company does with 5,000. The results have turned what was once a decade-long war into a month-long skirmish. In late 2018, for example, In Silico was generating novel molecules in fewer than 46 days. And this included not just the initial discovery, but also the synthesis of the drug and its experimental validation in computer simulations. Right now, they're using the system to hunt down new drugs for cancer, aging, fibrosis, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, ALS, diabetes, and many others. They're also in the early stages of using AI to predict the outcomes of clinical trials in advance of the trial. If successful, this technique will enable researchers to strip a bundle of time and money out of the traditional testing process. But even as extraordinary as these AI capabilities are, they might not compare to what's coming this decade in the field of nanotechnology and microrobots able to course through our bodies to effect repairs. Microbots and Fantastic Voyage. The Academy Award-winning 1966 science fiction film Fantastic Voyage chronicled the adventures of a submarine crew who were shrunk to microscopic size and placed into the body of an injured scientist to repair damage to his brain. Exactly six decades later, in 2016, Bionaut Labs was founded in Israel and has turned a version of this concept into science fact, having built and demonstrated remote-controlled microbots smaller than a grain of rice that travel through the body to deliver drug treatments to precise locations. Why does this matter? Many of the issues we face in medicine today are local in nature. Take brain, lung, or ovarian cancer. Unfortunately, we treat these local cancer issues with solutions like chemotherapy that affect the entire body, resulting in significant side effects. Bionaut Labs first seeks to revolutionize the treatment of central nervous system, CNS, disorders using these microbots less than a millimeter in diameter called Bionauts, that are remotely controlled by directed magnetic forces to steer their payloads. Once inside the brain tissue, located adjacent to a tumor, for example, the Bionauts are magnetically triggered to release their payload. Their accuracy is on par with surgeons' accuracy, whose standard deviation falls in a single millimeter range. Today, Bionauts can deliver biologics and small molecule therapeutics with unprecedented precision. Future generations of the devices could provide electrical stimulation, thermal ablation, or radioactive plaque to treat other diseases. And further down the road, as these resident microscopic robots shrink in size towards the nanoscale and increase in intelligence, they may lead to the future described by K. Eric Drexler in his pivotal book, Engines of Creation, The Coming Era of Nanotechnology, when universal assemblers, tiny machines that can build objects atom by atom, will be used as medicinal robots that help clear capillaries, target cancer, and repair any damage. In the near term, Bionauts are focused on the early diagnosis and treatment of Alzheimer's disease, Huntington's disease, and gliomas. Bionauts could provide ongoing surveillance to stave off the progression of these and many other diseases, which is why Tony and I invested in this company through Bold Capital. The accelerating speed of accelerating technologies. So there you have it. The power of computation, artificial intelligence, sensors, networks, and robotics to transform sick care into healthcare. For most listeners, the idea of achieving age reversal or longevity escape velocity may sound like science fiction, but I'd love for you to consider that it may not be any crazier than some of the other extraordinary advancements we've made in the past few decades. Flying cars, free global video calls on FaceTime, or AI's ability to accurately predict the folding of proteins, run Google Maps navigation, create deep fakes, and diagnose patients. It's perhaps no crazier than Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos taking us to Mars and the moon in the coming decade. While our linear human mind is great at making near-term predictions, we vastly underestimate what can be achieved in the longer term. Of course, the exponential technologies discussed above aren't standing still. We haven't reached humanity's pinnacle of technology. Our speed of innovation is actually accelerating. As I mentioned earlier, the only constant is change. A decade of progress between 1950 and 1960 is not the same as a decade of progress, say, 50 years later, between 2010 and 2020. The reasons for this are multifold. First, the exponential growth of computing power discussed earlier, namely Moore's Law. Second is the convergence of accelerating technologies such as the intersection of AI and robotics, or AI and gene therapy. Third is a specific set of three forces: save time, demonetization, and capital abundance. Let's take a quick look at each and why they are important. The first force is save time. Innovation needs time and focus, the ability of a researcher or entrepreneur to focus their available time on slaying scientific challenges. How we spend our time has changed a lot in the past few decades. Our ability to get almost any question we want answered instantly on Google is perhaps chief among them. Compare this to the days when you'd need to drive to the library and hope you could find a published book that had the data you needed. Add to this the save time resulting from instantaneous global communications and the ability to find the exact product you need and ordered online, having it delivered the very next day. And of course, as of the pandemic of 2020, there's the acceptance of connecting with someone over Zoom rather than spending an entire day flying from LA to New York for an hour-long meeting. All of this has an impact on the rate of innovation. As this bonanza of extra hours continues to pile up, inventors, entrepreneurs, those proverbial guys and gals in the garage, we'll get far more time to experiment, fail, pivot, fail again, pivot again, and eventually get it right. Technology has shrunk innovation development timelines and expanded the time innovators have to devote to development. It's a force that accelerates the rate of acceleration, but it's not the only one. Our second force is the demonetization of technology and services. While startups and researchers are getting access to more and more cash, the impact of every dollar is also accelerating, meaning that you can now do much more with a research investment dollar than you could just a decade ago. Perhaps there's no better example than the cost of DNA sequencing mentioned earlier in the book. To remind you, the Human Genome Project took about a decade to sequence a single human genome, completed in April of 2003 at an approximate cost of nearly $3 billion. Today, Illumina's latest generation sequencer has the potential to sequence your genome in an hour for $100, or 87,600 times faster and 30 million times cheaper. As a result, if you're working in genomics, then your government research grant or your last financing round now goes much further than ever before, accelerating insights and catalyzing breakthroughs. And what is true for gene sequencing is true in dozens of fields. everything from access to supercomputers on the cloud, near infinite, no-cost data storage, and free global video conferencing on Zoom. Add to this the impact of 3D printing and research tools such as sensors, cameras, accelerometers, just to name a few, that have shrunk 1,000-fold in size and 1,000,000-fold in price. Our third and final force is the abundance of capital. Nothing accelerates technological innovation like cash. Lots of cash. More cash translates into more people, equipment, experimenting, failing, and eventually creating breakthroughs. There is now more capital abundance than any other time ever. As The Economist points out, companies raised more capital in 2020, in the midst of a pandemic, than any time in human history. Perhaps the best example of this is the story of venture capital funding, the traditional source of startup capital that has helped to birth household names from Apple and Google to Amazon and Uber. In 2020, U.S. venture capitalist firms invested $156.2 billion in startups, equivalent to about $428 million every day of the year. This record sum was up from $136.5 billion invested in 2019. And, as one might expect, the biotechnology industry experienced massive year-over-year growth, from $17.2 billion in 2019 investments to an all-time high of $27.4 billion invested across 998 deals in 2020, largely driven by medical breakthroughs in vaccine development and COVID-19 therapies. Any way you slice it, this era of unprecedented capital abundance is massively accelerating innovation and funding crazy ideas and moonshots. Follow the money. To reinforce this final point about capital abundance, and to give you increased confidence that we may yet reach longevity escape velocity in the next decade or two, it's worth sharing the stories of some of the pioneering venture funds and government programs that are literally pouring billions of dollars into the field every year. Venture funds like Bold Capital Partners, my own fund, Prime Mover Labs, Coastal Ventures, which Tony and I are invested in, Section 32, Kitty Hawk Ventures, Google Ventures, Founders Fund, Arch Ventures, the Longevity Vision Fund, RA Capital, OrbiMed, Lux Capital, and the Hevolution Foundation, just to name a few, all of whom, cumulatively, are deploying many billions of dollars per year into this field. I'm on a mission to positively impact 1 billion lives by bringing an affordable and accessible version of healthcare and longevity to the world, says Sergey Young, managing partner of the Longevity Vision Fund and author of the book, The Science and Technology of Growing Young. Then there's a $3 billion fund by the name of Prime Mover Labs, PML, run by Dakin Sloss. Tony Robbins is one of the partners in this fund. PML invests in breakthrough scientific investments that transform billions of lives, says Dakin. We deploy about $200 million each year in the area of longevity in order to extend the quantity and quality of life for our human family. Add to this Coastal Ventures, which has $14 billion under management, and OrbiMed, whose $19 billion is dedicated solely to healthcare. And it isn't all private money moving this field forward. The Biden administration deserves accolades for their proposed $6.5 billion Advanced Research Projects Agency for Health, referred to as ARPA-H, modeled on the Advanced Research Projects Agency ARPA arm of the U.S. Defense Department, which in the 1960s gave America ARPANET, the precursor to today's global internet. It's proposed that ARPA-H would aim to deliver breakthrough treatments for diseases like Alzheimer's, cancer, and diabetes. Perhaps one of the most extraordinary and U.S. players in the aging field is the Hevolution Foundation, a nonprofit organization headquartered in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Hevolution was formed in partnership with leaders of both the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, and endowed with an initial budget that allows them to deploy at least $1 billion per year to fulfill their vision of extending healthy lifespan for the benefit of all humanity. To run the foundation, the leadership tapped a brilliant and visionary veteran in the field, Mahmoud Khan, MD, to be its CEO. Mahmoud is a powerhouse in the longevity field, having served as PepsiCo's former vice chairman and chief scientific officer, president of global R&D at Takeda Pharmaceuticals, and most recently the CEO of Life Biosciences, one of David Sinclair's companies. Every human has the right to flourish throughout their life, regardless of age, geography, or economic circumstances, said Khan. We see aging as humans' greatest opportunity, and we want to catalyze science to achieve scientific health span breakthroughs. To enable this, Hevolution will be underwriting scientific research to accelerate therapeutic approaches to aging, and will be making investments in companies engaged in work aligned to that research. Any way you cut it, that is a lot of capital accelerating the rate of health span and age reversal technologies. While few would argue that being healthier longer and not suffering in your final years is a good thing, some are concerned about the consequence of more humans on Earth, the specter of overpopulation. Will longer lives cause overpopulation of Earth? Earth is going to face a massive population collapse over the next 20 to 30 years. This would be civilization's way of dying with a whimper. Elon Musk, founder SpaceX and Tesla. In the 1980s, Paul Ehrlich released a book, The Population Bomb, that incited a worldwide fear of overpopulation. He said that too many people, packed into too tight spaces, would take too much of the Earth. Unless humanity cut down its numbers, all of us would face mass starvation on a dying planet. Original estimates by the United Nations had the world's population peaking at 10.9 billion people by 2100. To this day, when I speak publicly about age reversal longevity, many express their concerns about overpopulation. But data over the past few decades is painting a very different picture, one where the problem of society may well be underpopulation later this century. In 2021, The Lancet, one of the world's most prestigious medical journals, challenged the UN demographer's forecast, projecting that the global population will peak at 9.7 billion by 2064 and decline to 8.8 billion by 2100. That's 4 decades earlier and 2 billion fewer people. As it turns out, globally improving standards of living and declining reproductive rates have done just the opposite of what had been predicted, putting us in potential danger because of underpopulation. Fewer people overall means fewer workers. The population will shift towards the elderly, creating a heavier burden on the younger working population. Total fertility rate is a metric that demographers use to measure the number of children per woman. The population replacement rate, which is the average number of children per family for each generation to exactly replace itself, is roughly 2.1. The children per woman chart in the PDF included with this program tells a fascinating and hopeful story. 70 years ago, the global average fertility rate was 5.05. Several countries such as Rwanda, Kenya, and the Philippines had a fertility rate higher than 7 children per woman. China had a fertility rate just over 6, while India was just below 6. Only one country in the world had a fertility rate below 2, and that was the small European nation of Luxembourg. The United States, in comparison, had a total fertility rate of 3.03. in 1950. But a lot has changed since then. Today, roughly 80% of the world's population lives in countries with a fertility rate below 3. As of 2020, the global average fertility rate has more than halved to 2.44. Several countries now have a fertility rate that is significantly below the replacement level, with the United States at 1.77, and women in countries such as Iran and Thailand having just 1.6 children on average. What is the reason for this unprecedented decline? In short, there are 3 major reasons: the empowerment of women, declining child mortality, and the rising cost of raising children. And the COVID-19 pandemic seems to have accelerated this trend towards underpopulation. Historically, there's been a spike in births 9 months after disasters, and some people are wondering whether there will be a COVID baby boom. But it's more complicated than that. Many people are now more unsure of their financial safety. Child care during the pandemic has been difficult. Parents are cut off from extended family who would have been part of a newborn's upbringing. And the numbers reflect these trends. Clinics are reporting an increase in requests for birth control prescriptions. The pandemic has changed the way the world thinks of children. It might even bring the world closer to underpopulation sooner than we think. Back in April 2021, when I interviewed Elon Musk for the launch of the $100 million XPRIZE carbon removal, I asked him about his concern on the topic of population. He shook his head and said, "Earth is going to face a massive population collapse over the next 20 to 30 years. This would be civilization's way of dying with a whimper. More than ever, we need to increase our productive and healthy lifespan. If we don't extend healthy life and productive health span, we are likely to face a significant shortage of labor. So, not only will longer, healthy lives allow us to spend more time with loved ones and fulfill our bucket list dreams, they also have the potential for enormous economic value to society." In 2021, researchers at Harvard, Oxford, and the London School of Business have demonstrated just how much increasing healthy lifespan is worth in dollars. Slowing aging by only 1 year is worth $38 trillion to the global economy. That is just 1 year. Imagine the societal benefits and economic value of increasing healthy lifespan by 10 to 20 years. Dreams of immortality. So there you have it, a tour de force of the exponential technologies and capital abundance being applied to health and longevity, a set of tools that may allow many listening to this book, should they desire it, to get to the goal of longevity escape velocity. How long might you live? Does an age of 120 years mean a wheelchair and drool? What might be possible this decade or the next? To close out this chapter, I'll highlight the work and predictions of two friends who you've met earlier in this book, age reversal experts, both at Harvard Medical School, Dr. George Church and David Sinclair. As we touched on in Chapter 4, in December 2020, Dr. Sinclair was the principal author on a landmark paper, the cover story of Nature magazine. The article was titled, "Turning Back Time, Reprogramming Retinal Cells Can Reverse Age-Related Vision Loss." Dr. Sinclair summarized the significance of the published work as follows. The main point of the paper is that we found that there is a backup copy of youthful information in the cell that we can access that gives us the ability to reboot cells, even in a living animal. In the case of the Nature paper, we found that we could reboot the cells of the mouse eye and rejuvenate them, taking them back in time. The vision system of the mouse didn't just appear younger, it was literally younger. And the fact that there is a backup copy of youthful information gives me a lot of hope that we can do this in other organs and tissues as well. Sinclair continued, "The field has come a long way over the last 5 years, where we can now openly speak about the idea of aging reversal. Now it's one of the hottest topics to study, and hundreds of labs around the world are working on this topic. It's a gold rush to see what tissues or organs we can epigenetically reprogram to make them more youthful." When asked how age reversal might work in humans, David describes a scenario where someone, perhaps 60 years old, goes for a treatment that uses three of the four Yamanaka factors to epigenetically reprogram their body. Dr. Shinya Yamanaka won the 2012 Nobel Prize in Medicine for describing the use of four factors able to produce induced pluripotent stem cells. Following the treatment, everything from their skin to their brain and their liver would rejuvenate, reversing an age some number of decades. And then when you age out, a few decades later, you would go in for another rejuvenation treatment and keep resetting the system. "We don't know how many times we can reset a person's age," continues Sinclair, "but I would be surprised if it couldn't be done multiple times." When asked for a timeline, Dr. Sinclair answers, "I hope we'll have proof of concept done in the next 2 to 3 years. And if that works, we'll go as fast as the FDA allows." What tissues are Dr. Sinclair and his colleagues working on reprogramming? He quickly rattles off a list: liver, spleen, muscle, kidney, hearing, brain. And one of my colleagues reprogrammed the hippocampus in mice, and those mice regained their memories. The other great thinker in the field of age reversal, mentioned earlier in this chapter and in the book, is the prolific scientist and parallel entrepreneur, Dr. George Church. His work and predictions alongside Dr. Sinclair's have left me in awe with great optimism about the decades ahead. The strategy of aging reversal treatments, began Church, is to test them against various diseases that have nothing in common other than they happen to be diseases of aging in the same animal. If a single treatment can reverse a multitude of age-related diseases, then you have an age reversal treatment, and that's exactly what was demonstrated in mice by one of my postdoc students, Dr. Noah Davidson. As we discussed in Chapter 17, Dr. Davidson, alongside Dr. Church, has started a company called Rejuvenate Bio that is looking to treat six different diseases of aging in dogs. Early results are very positive, and we hope to have approval for these age reversal treatments in dogs within the next couple of years, said Church. Then, if all goes well, we will start human clinical trials a couple of years after that. When asked about how old humans might be able to live given the progress in rejuvenation science, Dr. Church responded, "I don't think there's an upper limit. I think it's a matter of how quickly we get there. Everything is pointing towards the fact that exponential technology growth is especially effective in biology, which is now an information science. It is quite possible that some of the people alive today will see no upper limit. And it's quite possible that some of us in this conversation today will be seeing 150 or 200 years of age. And at that point, our technology will be so advanced that it just keeps going. 25 years ago, when my dreams of spaceflight seemed to be moving too slowly, it was the $10 million Ansari X Prize for spaceflight that helped spark the private spaceflight industry we are now experiencing. For the same reason, leaving nothing to chance and hoping to accelerate the realm of age reversal as fast as possible, today I'm working with top scientists, David Sinclair, George Church, and Sergey Young included, to design and fund a $100 million age reversal X Prize. As of this writing, $55 million has been committed thus far. Our goal is to inspire as many teams as possible to demonstrate the technology needed to rejuvenate each of us by at least 25% of our lifespan. For more information, please visit xprize.org. So there you have it, a future in which CRISPR, gene therapy, stem cells, replacement organs, AI, and a multitude of other exponential technologies had the potential to extend what society believes to be the typical human health span. Will we be able to reach the 120-year age of Moses? It seems likely. But what about Adam at 930, or Methuselah at 969 years old? Many of us listening to this book, should science succeed in achieving longevity escape velocity, may just find out. I, for one, am doing all that I can to remain vital and healthy to intercept the next few decades of exponential change coming our way. At a minimum, it includes all of the recommendations made in earlier chapters on diet, exercise, sleep, supplements, and an annual diagnostic upload. But perhaps one of the most important things you can do is to adopt a longevity mindset, a mindset characterized by a more fulfilling, passionate, and purposeful life. To guide us through the power of decision, mindset, and how to create an extraordinary quality of life, there is no one better than Tony Robbins.